Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
In today's episode, Travis and I talk about Blades of Cain, as well as the Felgor Ravagers, in sort of an open format. Stay tuned for the conversation. Now I've had like 4 or 5 games on Beta Decima.
I still have yet to play my first game. I think on the 10th I'll be playing a round or two, but it is Lunar New Year, so I might end up just having to be secondhand. But, you know, Adrian, world's number one ITC, is going to be running that tournament for me. Which is great, because he can watch the gameplay and kind of build an opinion off of that. Have you been catching any, like, major gotchas on the terrain?
It is, like, everyone's first impression on Beta Decima. I mean, it's, like, it's a whole other thing to figure out just how to get 3 primary. Because, like, some of the stuff is, like, 9 inches away and on a vantage, and there's, like, a jump test there. So, like, not every team has an easy time just, like, getting, like, keeping those 3 threes that everyone's so, like, acclimate, like, used to just having it given to you.
Yeah, I mean, starting in the old days, it was, you know, 5 objectives. So you were looking for a 3-2, or you're looking for, like, a 2-1. And then in the post-2022 crit ops, we moved to everyone gets 3, and then you're looking for a break. And now on Beta Decima, now we've got stuff that's just out of reach unless you're playing something with fly. Or you have a climbing rope. Climbing rope seems great right now. I do think that there is some interesting movement stuff that is kind of predicated on players placing the correct sorts of Beta Decima objectives on stuff. I think I watched players play the square gantry, or it's like at the edge of a gantry, there was a objective. But if you put the wrong one there and you can't jump on top of it, it is kind of miserable.
Yes. Yeah, so basically my rule of thumb is any of the objective markers that are on a vantage are going to be the flat ones, and then anything that's on, like, the floor can be one of the taller, like, chunky ones.
Yeah, and I think one other thing that I've seen people mention is that when you're making the jump test, that you have to pay a traversal fee. If you are jumping over to a thing with vantage point, you can actually jump on top of the objective, and that should be more than enough for a normal move. So I would dash over to the jump, and then normal move over and jump on top of the objective and keep going. Not that it really makes it like a safe landing spot, but at least you can get over from the awkward side where you have to make a jump.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I was going to ask more about, is the objective markers are traversable. So if you are going to like end with a model just like a sliver on the objective, is that like just completely illegal? Or do you have to pay a traversal to, like, end there? And then if you start a move on it, like, you have to traverse also?
Yeah. Well, if you're on top of it, you don't have to pay a traversal fee because you're on a vantage point. So you can just, like, continue moving and then drop off. And because the drop is less than 2 inches, it's actually a free drop. So if you're on top of it, it's okay. But if you're going to phase through it at all, you got to pay a traversal fee. And I think looking at the objectives, there's 2 of them. There's 2 with flat tops, those are vantage points, and then the other 3 with the antennas in the middle, those are nothing, which is kind of miserable.
Like, insignificant. But, like, the antennas still, like, cover.
Yes.
And then I was like, playing it as even just, like, the lip, if you're behind it, is light cover too?
Yes, that's how I'm expecting it gets played. Like, the entire thing, fully, is light cover. And I think reading here, it says a Beta Decima objective marker is an objective marker as normal, but it's also terrain feature with a light and traversable traits. Parts of it no more than 1 inch tall, base and hatch, but not its aerial, also have the vantage point trait. So maybe you could argue that if you can land on top of the flat rim part, that is still a vantage point, and you can kind of balance kind of wibbly wobbly there. Maybe that's a way to make it workable, because when they are in the middle of like those gantries, it can be just hard to get a model on top of it. So maybe that's what they expected. I haven't really been reading too much of the online discourse right now, so I will say I'm a little disconnected from the Thunderdome right now. Have you seen any discussions that you want to kind of hash out right now?
I haven't seen a lot of people like discussing about it. Mostly like the channels I'm in are like Phobos and Intercession and a little bit of Blades of Cain. But it seems like not a lot of people are talking about Beta Decima like in those channels, which is kind of something mm-hmm. I'm expecting more of. But also just like I'm a fan of just playing the game and running into my own situations to figure out like what I want to discuss. And like if someone brings something up and I don't even know what's going on, like I'm not qualified to discuss it. So I'm still definitely in my like get the experience phase.
Yeah, I think for the most part, like a lot of people are talking about stuff. There's some weird kind of walking around barricade stuff because there is a lot of barricade blocking that looks like it is possible. So that will be what I'm looking at this next weekend. Actually, the weekend where this comes out. So, you know, if anyone is in the Brooklyn area and wants to play at the Brooklyn Strategist, we'll have our normal monthly. And I think we're going to have pretty much a full spread of Beta Decima. So everyone at that tournament is going to have opinions at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as a Phobos player, I'm like, ooh, this is very tasty.
Yeah, I mean, on our Discord, you've been trying to brainwash everyone into doing all in curses. I will say, you know, it is kind of convincing. Most people can't shoot you back very convincingly, so that's nice. Although, the moment you play against another Pathfinder player, it's going to be rough.
But, like, how many ignore obscurings can you set up per turn anyways?
I can set up with 8 operatives, or maybe not. I would probably just run more operatives with marker lights. I'd probably have 8 sets of marker lights, and I can do, and one of my guns will be silent. So 4 dice on 3s, on 2s, actually. 3 mortal wounds, 2. Yeah, so like 3-5 AP-1 with 2 sets of rerolls.
And like the amount of, what is it, 4 marker lights to ignore obscuring?
Or to ignore obscuring, but you can also shoot as if you're +1, and you have a dude that naturally ignores obscuring. So
yeah, so a couple. Who's it? The Blooded? It's like the Pathfinder Blooded.
So Transspectral ignores obscurity all the time, kind of like you. However, in the the no obscurity mirror matching, he's probably just going to stay on conceal and set up marker lights before turn 2. And the goal would be that it's pretty hard to stop visibility, I think, on Beta Decima. So I would just push you up to 5 marker lights on turn 1. And then on turn 2, pop Montca, kill 3 Marines, and then put the other ones on Suicide Watch.
So killing 3 all at once, because you would get enough marker lights to have 3 of them fully marker lit.
Yeah, because you can put 2 marker lights on each of your dudes. So with 8 marker light or 6 heavy marker lights or 7 heavy marker lights, you can definitely ramp it up pretty hard.
Yeah, that'll definitely do it. Especially because you can't actually do it from conceal.
Yeah, we can just do it fully on conceal and you would just play it differently. Which is, you know, that's kind of the benefit of them. But it seems like community-wise, talking to the other TOs in the Northeast and even just like hearing some of the community, don't know how much it's going to be uptaken. So it really remains to be seen. And GW hasn't announced whether or not they're going to be using it at any of the U.S. Opens, nor have we seen the U.S. Open schedule, at least at the time of recording on the Friday, maybe on Monday when this podcast drops, they'll release the whole schedule.
Yeah, if it does release, we will definitely be posting about it in the Discord. So if you are wondering where's a good place to keep an eye out for that, you can join our Discord, which will be linked in the show notes, Just Another Kill Team Discord, and we'll let you know as soon as we hear about it.
But I guess, you know, we could do a little bit of an operative showdown without our intended host or intended co-host today.
Operative showdown.
We've been talking a little bit about the Blades of Cain on the side and, you know, how the operatives are. Maybe now that we've played them a little bit more, we can talk, you know, about what we feel the operatives are good at. Or maybe in this case, because you've been playing mostly Howling Banshees, we can talk about which of the 5 aspect techniques you've been getting the most use out of.
And I definitely have been coming around to looking at the other aspects more. Just like for learning the team, it is a great way to start, is just play one aspect. Also, it's financially cheaper because you just get one thing and you don't have to get all of the boxes of everything.
But to be fair, Howling Banshees are a two box team, right? Because you need eight of them.
Yes. Yep. And then you just make like extra Exarchs out of your leftover two models.
Yeah, I mean, I think my Exarch has a fully illegal build because she's got an Executioner and a Triskelli just because it looks cool. But, you know, what's an Executioner if not just a very long power sword?
Exactly.
A power spear, as I would say.
Yes. Yeah. So actually, on that note, I think if I was going to choose a first slot for the Operative Showdown, I would choose the Banshee Exarch. What loadouts and why? And so there's like the Mirror Sword, there's the Triskelli and the Power Weapon, the Executioner, and then just a regular Power Weapon and a Shuriken Pistol. Is there one that immediately jumps out to you and why? Or like matchup dependent, of course.
I don't know. I feel like the Triskelli is kind of like a take all comers weapon. Like the melee profile is 6 attacks on 2s, 3, 4. So it's pretty good at everything, especially because you can parry first if you need to, and it's got a pretty nasty torrent profile, so it just forces people to be very careful about it. And then the other weapon is probably just the power sword for a melee build, just because, you know, you've got the range attack on lock already with the Exarch between the Scream and the Triskelli. Like, do you really need a Shuriken pistol? So I would probably just take a power sword at that point, because I think you have to take a power sword if you're going to take the Triskelli.
Yeah, I think so.
What about you? What have you been taking? Have you been taking the Triskelli? Because, like, to me, it seems like, yeah, this is probably the best choice, but maybe I'm missing something. Because you played a little bit more than I have in the recent history.
There's a couple of games that I tried the Mirror Swords, and I regretted it every time. It's just, like, absolutely
5 dice on 2s, relentless power swords.
Yeah, so it's just like your power sword but relentless. And then I was kind of thinking, I was like, you know what, if you are really relying on a play where you absolutely need one crit, you're just like definitely gonna get that with 10 dice. But the thing is, don't plan for that, because the shooting flexibility is way more valuable. I've also put a plasma grenade on my Exarch so that I can, like, if you pair it with being able to shoot twice, you could, like, jump up on a platform, shoot, like, throw the grenade to hit some people, and then throw the Triskelli, because you can shoot twice as the Exarch, and then immediately you have this, like, huge threat range of all of that movement, and you can fly about it, and you can shoot twice for free. So, like, the plasma grenade of the Triskelli is, like, gives you a lot of flexibility, whereas, like, you still have this super amazing melee profile. If you don't get a crit, then it just, like, sucks to be you, I guess.
Yeah, because the real thing is you're almost always carrying around the just a scratch on her. So you can take one stray hit, and with the Triskelli and 6 attacks, you get first hit, you have just a scratch. So you're really not ever in that much danger from a stray person charging you, because you effectively dodge 2 whole melee attacks. And then you still got 4 dice left over on 2s, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and the Triskelli is also Reap and Rending, which is, like, especially combined with the relatively low damage profile of 3-4, actually makes it, like, even more insane. Because, like, if you jump into a cluster of, like, Vet Guard or something, and you get a single crit out of your 6 dice, and if you've got Ruthless Poise, you've got a reroll, which is essentially 7 dice. If you get a single crit, it becomes 2. And then if they don't, you can crit strike them for 4, which is going to do 2 reap damage to everyone else in the cluster. Crit strike them for 4 again, which is going to kill them and do 2 more reap damage to everyone else in the cluster. And then if you fight again and you get a single other crit again, you'll do the same exact thing. And it's very, very possible, and not even that crazy at all, that you could kill 3 pleb models with one activation in melee from the Banshee Exarch.
Yeah, I mean, she's like clearly the best of the Exarchs, mostly because the Dire Avenger is just not great, because he can either be a long range operative with kind of middling long range output, or he can be a short range operative with an invuln save. And neither of those two is a particularly compelling option, I think, along with the aspect techniques of the Dire Avenger just not really offering all that much in terms of hero play. because if you're a short range operative, you don't get a gun. You get a power, you get like a 4-up invuln and a sword. So the all of the torrent stuff, all of the shoot while moving doesn't do anything. If you give him a freaking pistol, he's just kind of lame. And it's just like, he's by far the worst of the options because he's like a discount melee operative or his double gun build, which is like the way that he looks in my memory as a child, is just bad because it doesn't do enough damage.
Yeah, I mean, the shoot twice, hitting on twos, if it was easier to get balanced, like, you have to shoot against models that are not ready. There's, like, a playstyle there for it. And, like, shoot twice and no cover. And then, like, the torrent shoot, I'm like, I don't know. If I had to choose the Dire Avenger Exarch, I would just do the good old-fashioned Shuriken Catapult. That's the 4 shots on 2s, 3/4 rending, unlimited range, and just, like, have him be a shooting piece because of his native shoot twice, which you can also do in the middle of your move. I haven't thought about this. Could you do the hurricane shooting to move, shoot twice, and then move back? Probably not.
Definitely not. I don't... Well, let's take a look. You know, now that you've asked the question, let's see. During a normal move, perform 1 shoot. So yes, definitely lame. Not. I was pretty sure you couldn't, but it's fun to double check every now and then.
Yeah.
But yeah, my big issue is that, like, they get upgraded to extra attacks with their equipment. But if you take the twin shuriken catapult, you have gun butts. So you actually don't get a 4th attack.
Does the panoply or whatever that thing's called give you a 4th attack?
No, it does. It gives you 1 extra attack, but 4 attacks, 2, 3 with gun butts versus fists. It's like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here with this Dire Avenger Exarch? This dude who's been trained for hundreds, if not thousands of years. He's got twin shuriken catapults, 4 dice on 3, 3/3 relentless rending, and he can torrent once, and then he can charge and he can fight you with 4 dice on 3s, 2/3. Like, is that... Is this really what we want to do with our time?
Yeah, that's really some pretty lukewarm performance compared to the lore.
Yeah, I just don't understand why the Exarch was... It's just like, he could have a build where he has the catapult and he's got a dire sword, and then he's a perfectly fine mixed operative that can, like, play the game. But instead, we just get a sad operative that does none of this. Captain or you could lukewarm. Take a shimmer shield and a shuriken pistol, which is like... I don't understand.
I think that's like the saddest, because then he can't shoot long, he can't fight, and then the shimmer shield is just like you're planning to stand out in the open and get shot, and that's just a losing strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the most disappointing of the 3 Exarchs, which, you know, the part of the problem is that none of his abilities let him do the mix thing, and his loadouts don't let him do the mix thing, and then the aspect techniques don't let him do the mix thing. So you're stuck with a bad melee operative or a bad shooting operative. And unfortunately, 4 dice on 3s, 3/3 relentless rending doesn't even kill a 7-wound dude in cover most of the time, I suspect.
That's why you gotta take the 4 dice on 2s, 3/4 rending. And then if you want the reroll, it's gotta be like Vengeance of Cain, or like give him the Wraithbone Talisman, which I know is not great.
It's just sad. You know, like, it's just like, look at this dude. He can't do anything fun. But with that said, now we're on the final Exarch, the striking Scorpion Exarch, who is kind of neat, but also not nearly as fancy as the Howling Banshee.
Yeah, I mean, at least the Exarchs have the 3-up, including the striking Scorpion. I know he's got the claw.
I think that you can twin up on pistols and chain swords, but your twin shuriken pistols are hit on 4s, which is not great for an ancient dude, because the indirect ability is kind of what's cute with him. Like, you go up to someone, you indirect them with relentless. It's kind of nice, but meh. And then you've got like the 5/6, or, you know, the 5/8 ability is on your first attack with biting blade, or you have scorpion's claw and chain sword with a shuriken pistol, which also gives you like a 4/8 profile, or like a 6/8 profile in the first hit. It's not bad, but it's not, it doesn't really tickle my brain, you know, when I look at him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So all of his melee stuff is 5 attacks. So at least there's that. The biting blade. Are you? Can you take a pistol when you do that?
The biting blade comes with a pistol. I think all of them come with a pistol.
Like, does even the scorpion's claw and chainsword include a pistol?
Everything comes with at least a shuriken pistol. So his floor is 6-inch range, 4 dice on 3s, 3-4 rending, which is fine. But if you go the twin shuriken pistols, twin chainswords, he dual wields, and he gets relentless on both profiles, but his shuriken pistols hit on 4s, which is okay, but not great.
Yeah,
and then the twin chainswords are relentless rending, which is fine against 7-wound operatives. That's kind of the only spot where it shines. So, I mean, like, my big issue with striking scorpions is just that their aspect techniques feel very sneaky and not very flashy. Like, Patient Stalk Sudden Blow only can be done on conceal. So you can, like, spit at someone, but it means that you're not fighting afterwards. And striking scorpions are not great at getting charged. Like, if you move up to someone and spit at them, they're just going to shoot you.
Yeah.
Which is not great, because you have either a 3-up save or a 4-up save, and you only have 8 or 9 wounds, which is not great. So you can't use that aggressively. Strike and Fade is great, but you have to kill them. And it pretty much has to be,
like, an overextended enemy.
Yeah, and it has to, yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, someone's going to move up to you and shoot you. And then Scorpion's Eye is cute, because it gives you indirect, but, you know, then your Scorpion's kind of on suicide watch. And then Merciless Strikes only works when you start a fight to get stun, which is not great, because really your big cheese is that you just instantly kill someone.
Yes, and the fact that they don't have nearly as reliable of crits as the Howling Banshees do means requiring crits is not nearly as good for them. So, like, really the only two here that I actually like are the Scorpion's Eye for indirect and one with the Gloom, which is Super Conceal. Conceal is great, and you can just, like, run up and be like, you know what, this objective is mine, and I don't even have to do anything for it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, pretty much just, like, only for the first turning point to grab an unsafe midfield objective, and then it'll probably never be helpful again.
I will say the one good thing about One with Gloom, and, like, the one big plus for striking scorpions, is that One with Gloom lasts until that operative next goes. So if you're using it to take, like, one of the midboard objectives that can stage onto another midboard objective with that +1 inch of extra movement on the charge, what you can do is One with Gloom, move into position and wait until your opponent has to either come up to touch you or, you know, touch a new objective, and then you can jump them the turn after, because it stays there until you next use them. It's just meh.
Okay, yeah, I hadn't noticed it was until their next activation. That definitely makes it a lot more helpful. You could, like, stage somewhere, and then you could even, you don't have to activate them first, and they'll still stay hidden, which is actually helpful.
That is probably, like, the big play if you did want to run a skew list with them. I have played them a couple times, and I don't think the skew list is quite as good, but maybe there's something to be said for 10 striking, like, 8 striking scorpions. I am probably going to try it, because I am still waiting to get my box, but I'll have 10 of them, so I might as well build the Exarchs and give it a try.
Yeah, I'm honestly kind of interested. Like, all of them as a skew, I'm kind of excited about. And just, like, the striking scorpions, I mean, you do the indirect thing to whittle them down, and then with your Manda Blasters and a single chainsword hit, you finish stuff off. The trouble is just, you die even faster than the Banshees, because the Banshees can at least, the Scream That Steals, and, you know, they've got power swords.
They can also parry first, I think, is the big one. So, like, if someone is going to go into melee with you, the Banshees do tend to live a little bit longer than the Exarch, or than the Striking Scorpions do. Meanwhile, the Striking Scorpions have nothing defensively unless they kill you.
Yeah, so that's pretty much just, like, lurk on people and then hit them with the indirect and then charge and fight. So you like, really, with that one, you just want to stage, like, exactly 6 inches or a little closer to, like, multiple threats. But then whichever one you don't win, like, spend initiative, like, for your first activation is probably going to get nuked.
Yeah, I actually think with Striking Scorpions, you're playing, like, very, very cagey on that early positioning and just forcing your opponent to spend 2 operatives to deal with the super concealed dude that, like, runs up, doinks a guy, and then fades back away. And they're like, okay, well, now I got to send a whole extra guy. And then the other guys can come up afterwards after your opponent starts the chain. But definitely doesn't seem like a great plan. That said, in interesting news, you know, a friend of the podcast, Can You Roll a Crit, he put out his annual stats video for the meta. And I think Blades of Cain have been doing pretty good at around like 60-ish percent.
Yeah, I saw that. She also pointed out at LVO they didn't do that, so that wasn't like what we saw. But just like globally, they had like a 60% win rate, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the whole world knows something that we don't, but the whole world seems to still be struggling with Void Dancer Troop, which, you know, as good as they are, have not been doing all that well as far as winning tournaments go. So I don't really know if that 60% really means that much, because it could just be 60%, but never winning a tournament, which is kind of what I expect it is.
Yeah, if you are playing Blades of Cain and you've been crushing things, and especially if you have won an event, reach out to us, because we would love to chat with you.
For sure, yeah. I mean, you know, it seems like Felgor Ravagers have been doing very well over the last couple weeks, and Talents of the Emperor still look like they're seeing play.
Yeah, really hanging in there. I will be surprised if Felgor Ravagers can hang on Beta Decima.
Yeah, I would say that it does feel like the all melee hordes are just going to really, really struggle on Beta Decima. However, maybe there are enough movement shenanigans where the horde guys can sit on the objectives, block up enough room where you literally can't get onto the pillars, and all you can do is run around on the edges and shoot them. And maybe that's what the plan is right now.
But then also, like, there are kind of are these lanes, but they're all like, you could just like sit there and like look at the maps on a PDF for like 30 minutes and see where all the lanes are on like all six maps, because it is really just like there is a channel. And actually, fun fact for melee players looking for your attack channels, the Ferrotonic Furnace is kind of like your go-to thing, because if you just like, if there's a map where you can park at the base of it, it's only 4 inches to get up. So it's, if you just like park threats at the bottom of the soup can, you can just like jump up and catch people by surprise. And that's probably going to work for, you know, a couple months until people catch on to it.
Yeah, for the soup can, you have to climb up from the edges, basically. You can't climb through the actual floor or like the actual roof of the thing, right?
You can climb through the
roof. It is accessible. Yes. Okay, so you start climbing, you just like appear on the top, and then shanks
scalable up. So it only costs 4 inches, so if you park at the base of the soup can, you can 100% charge like anyone that's on top.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe, you know, for anyone struggling to find a way to attack people, maybe hiding on the lower levels and coming up like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is where it's at.
It's pizza time.
It is on top of a giant floating pizza. So
just like put one barricade at the base so you can safely run up there and do that thing, and then just run up there and then just like pool up there and spill out and spill down onto the gantries below and just butcher everyone in glorious melee combat.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm pretty excited to see where it goes. People have been talking a lot about it, but I haven't seen too many big tournaments really adopt it, so we'll see how that goes. Have you been finding, because you've been playing a lot of the Blades of Cain, have you been finding that one specific aspect technique you're doing a lot more than the others?
It's definitely Reign of Tears. Reign of Tears is an aspect technique that if you, while you're in melee, when you strike with a crit, you can immediately disengage as with a fly movement as like a fallback and or dash, and it flies. Yeah, so it's like I'll pretty frequently put like a Banshee on a vantage point, and then like on like a, you know, an open board, just like a regular Octarius or whatever, and then you can just charge down on someone safely because they can't hit you because you're on a vantage point. And then you, even if your last, so like if, let's say I get a hit and a crit and you got 0 hits on your vet guard, I'm going to strike you with my normal, and then I'm going to strike you with the crit, which kills you. And then even though it wasn't the first strike, you can still Reign of Tears after that crit, after just wherever it is in the fight, and then just do a 3-inch fly move. And then you can just like fly into a crazy position that someone wasn't like watching out for, and then like blast the sniper with your pistol. Cause between the charge that you made and your 3-inch fly fallback, you really catapulted to somewhere absolutely crazy for like a shooting attack. And just like using that for shooting angles has been my favorite thing about the team.
Kind of reminds me of your long stint with Korn Melt-A-Gun Berserkers.
Yes, it's 100% the same energy. Speaking of which, the thing that I am the most disappointed by, and this is still probably just like a me learning kind of thing, but they have another aspect technique called the woe, and that is when you charge someone and fight, if you kill them, you can use whatever movement you had left of the charge as a free additional charge. So it's kind of just that like Korn chain lightning charge, and I don't know how I had such an easy time lining that up with Korn, but I have not at all lined that up even a single time with Blades of Cain yet. Maybe because I'm entirely just like looking for the Reign of Tears, and just like jumping around and stealing objectives and shooting people, but I have high expectations for that one.
I've actually had reasonable, like, I use the woe more than I end up using Reign of Tears, I think, when I've played with them. To be fair, both of them kind of fill a similar niche of turning your 3-APL operative into an operative that moves like 4-APL, which is very neat. So because you're running the skew Banshee list, right? So it's like you effectively get four dudes at 4-APL during combat. But you do have to line up the woe a lot harder than you have to line up Reign of Tears. Reign of Tears just gives you an extra free 3 inches in any direction, whereas the woe requires you use leftover movement to hit someone else. So your opponent does have to be kind of in tight clusters for the woe to even be relevant.
Yeah, I think part of what made it so successful for me with Korn is I would go for a long bomb charge where there was another target within three. And this is actually the same thing that works for Felgor, because they have like another like perpetual aggression type thing. I forgot what it's called. But the Felgor one is a tactical ploy. So you charge, you kill someone in melee, you pay 1 CP, and then you 3-inch charge into someone else. Whereas the woe... Yeah, Ruthless Rampage. But the woe, everything has to fit inside that charge range in the first place. So if you are going to do a multi-charge, you probably want to be like staged 8 inches from, or 9 inches or whatever, from what you actually want to hit, and there's someone in the way. And that's more of what it's for, rather than doing this like crazy 14-inch like long bomb chain lightning charge through multiple enemies.
Yeah, it's for the Banshee that wants to get two different dudes in a smaller area, but you can definitely hit both of them, and depending on how you do it, you might be able to end in a spot that is more useful, just because that second operative is now another landing spot.
Yeah. And Banshees are definitely another one that want to hold people hostage. So like if someone, the first, like one of the big things I'm watching out for with any kind of a melee team, and especially with Banshees, is if you put a model that's already activated out in the middle, I'm just going to like run up and hug him so that you can't shoot me. And then next turn you can chop him and move along, which is way better for 3-APL teams than 2-APL teams. So that works really well.
Yeah, I mean, the Banshees in this situation also have a pretty good killer app against the melee-centric teams outside of Felgor, just because the Shriek That Kills gives you, you know, 1 to 2 extra chances at stun, right?
Yeah, the stun thing there is super strong. And just, like, that's another thing that is, if someone has, like, you can even trap a ready operative if you're within 6 inches of them at the start of an activation, and I just want to, like, get my teeth sunk into the enemy team, and I like, and you've got like some goober that's sitting in the midfield, and then I park a Banshee 6 inches away, and then at the start of turn two use the Shriek That Kills, and if it does get a stun, then I can charge you and just like hang out and like steal your point, your loot point or whatever, and now you can't fall back because you only have 1 APL, and anyone else that's going to like come try to fight the Banshee is probably going to have a bad time.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a team that can abuse all of its tricks. You haven't played like the full on 3-aspect split at this point, right?
Not yet. But especially after seeing Beta Decima, I'm kind of looking at it a little bit more.
Yeah, I will say that Martial Harmony, Faction Attack Up 3 for Blades of Cain, very, very easy. Just the fact that you only need 2 out of 3 conditions makes it almost trivial, especially because the Striking Scorpions can camp next to people so safely.
Yeah.
Which is very nice.
Yeah, and plus also, since you only need 2 out of 3, you can totally do like 4-4 splits. So it could be like, I'm going to take 4 Banshees and 4 Dire Avengers, and then I've got like some goobers to hang out and like do the mission actions and hold points and have shooting threats that keep people's head down. And then like the Banshee Exarch and 3 other Banshees are just going to like run around and murder everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is very, very powerful. I would not say that Master of the Techniques is worth trying to do at all from my experience. I don't know if you've had any experience, any success with it, actually, Jason.
I really only looked at it at first from a Banshee standpoint. Because that's the one, that's the faction specific attack up.
All 5 techniques. So for Banshees, you need to charge twice. You need to hit someone with a crit. You need to parry first. You need to fly. And you need to shoot someone with a stun grenade. Which seems pretty doable, but becomes much harder the moment your operatives start dropping.
Yeah. Lining up the woe is a whole thing. And like I said, I haven't pulled that off yet. And it's just like, it's a lot to think about. It's a lot to keep track of. Yeah, it's definitely something that I feel like I would have to be way more practiced to even think about. And then like with the other ones, cause what are the, then you also are completely trapped in, if you do Striking Scorpions, you need to get a crit and like trigger the stun. And then it's based around do it for the points and not do it when the timing is right. And then also, like, you need the crits. And if you don't get the crits, then you... Whoops, sorry, you didn't score that.
Yeah, I would definitely not try Master Techniques with Scorpions. I will be very surprised if Striking Scorpions end up becoming the Blades of Cain meta without some crazy amount of buffs. But maybe, you know, if we're wrong, make sure to let me know, because I would love to have my mind changed.
Yes. Yeah, and then the Dire Avengers, like unstinting immovable, you have to like get shot and then have like a crit and 2 fails, and that's the only way it'll trigger.
Basically, if you get a crit save, you can take a miss and turn it into a hit. You only have to do it once,
but you have to discard another die to do it, and then either you already had a successful die and that's pointless, or you have a crit and 2 misses.
No, it says when you discard 1 or more, so it's as you discard your misses. If you get a crit, you keep one of them. So, but that, to be fair, you still need to have gotten a crit in a shooting attack, which is not great in Kill Team, because the majority of the most dangerous guns will give you exactly 2 dice or 1 die. Yeah. Unless your leader is giving you a shimmer shield and you can take 3 dice all the time.
There it is. That's how you do the unstinting immovable. You just sacrifice your leader to stand out in the open with an engage order and his shimmer shield, so he can trigger it to give you victory points. He's just the aspect technique farm.
That's what we listeners are here for on Niche Tactics. Stand your Shimmer Shield Dire Avenger with no ranged weapons out in the open so you can get unstinting immovable.
He's just sitting there with a piece of straw in his mouth and he's like, it's not much, but it's honest work.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah, definitely do not try to master the techniques. It is neat, but very, very hard. You know, definitely not worth doing. And I think only the Howling Banshees, outside of, you know, the discussion here, are the only ones that are kind of theoretically capable of doing it, just because each operative can also do it when they get charged. So you have extra windows where you can actually score these things. And it's actually reasonable for you to use. Whereas like the unstinting immovable onto the Dire Avengers, you have to get shot and then you have to get a crit, which means that you're not very likely to ever get a chance to use it.
Yeah.
And then when you look at Aspect Warfare, Faction Tac Op 1, there's not actually a reason to take it over Martial Harmony, because Martial Harmony you can do while doing 0 damage, which means you can always go for it, whereas Aspect Warfare requires everyone to doink someone, which is not always going to happen. It is fun and flavorful, and if it was 2 out of 3 doink someone, it would definitely be playable, but Martial Harmony is much easier.
Yeah, Yeah, so it's all three in the same turning point. Yeah, I feel like you've got to go for like an even split and take every chance you can get, and like if people aren't giving you targets, which is pretty common.
I mean, I played both Aspect Warfare and Martial Harmony, and I thought Aspect Warfare, I did it first because it seemed kind of more fun to do, and I was able to get it, but it did get a little bit dicey when my first Dire Avenger died. Martial Harmony, however, that back Dire Avenger stood on top of an objective on conceal behind heavy cover and never moved and scored me Martial Harmony. So that's probably either Martial Harmony needs to get worse or Aspect Warfare needs to get better. Either direction if we were going to make small changes to them.
Once again, the Dire Avenger doing that honest, humble work.
Yep, you just got to stay in there and get points. How has your, you know, local scene been doing? You know, today we were hoping to try to hit up a global TO, but, you know, without that happening, how have things been going locally for the Minnesota kill teams?
Well, we definitely have. We've put all of our coals back into the same fire. I totally butchered that metaphor, but we were kind of like spread out with trying to be a little too ambitious with game nights all over the cities. And but now we've got it all centralized, and it's just we've got a Tuesday night and a Wednesday night, and it's really been like coming back to life. So like we've got that going on, and we've had like 12 to 15 people there pretty consistently since we like gathered everybody in one spot again.
Very cool. Very cool. So it sounds like it's been growing. I think, you know, Will's been kicking it back up.
Yep. Will threw a narrative tournament last weekend. And then we've got a couple other tournaments coming up. So this upcoming Saturday from when this is released, we've got one that's going to be, for if there's any Minnesota listeners that don't know about it, it is at the Dreamers Vault in St. Louis Park. And I don't know [S2] Nice. [S1] If there's like a cap on that, but it's probably going to be like less than 16. And [S2] Very cool. [S1] Then the week after that, I'm going to run a little like Adepticon practice tournament thing. That's just like everyone gather and bring your meanest, and let's just like beat each other up and get ready for Adepticon.
Nice. So getting ready for Adepticon, that's the operative word, huh?
Yes. Yeah, and it looks like we've got like a few people that are planning to go. So that's exciting. The Minnesota crew coming out strong. I haven't seen it, but I heard that someone made a logo that is Paul Bunyan, but as an orc. So Paul Bunyork. We're like, I'm going to make the team kind of based on that in some way.
We always love a good pun.
Good old Paul Bunyork.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm excited to hear where that's going, because I know the last time we talked about, you know, more competitive scenes, it sounded like Minnesota had a lot of people who were into the game, but not really into the super competitive side. So it sounds good that that's kind of slowly improving.
Agreed. Yeah. How has your local scene been?
I feel like things have been maybe a little bit on the slower side. Obviously, there was a lot of hype when Adrian came back as worldwide number one, just because for the first 2 years of Kill Team, we just kind of assumed that Spain was just going to keep it because they had more tournaments than us at a pretty large scale. So it was it seemed at the time very unlikely that one player would actually pick up enough wins to really challenge them. But Adrian did a great job and was able to steal it at the last minute, basically.
Yeah, I mean, like, he did have a really good track record, like, coming into LVO. Like, how many golden tickets did he win?
Quite a few. I think he had four.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, the whole story of that weekend, you know, LVO for our whole group was really you did very well, and Adrian, you know, kept it right up until the last second. And I think actually his vlog will be going up on our new YouTube channel, just because it's an easy outlet, and we're already, you know, Goonhammer helped get, you know, the three of us out there. So we're going to put it up on our channel, and then it'll be up on Goonhammer for as like a hyperlink, basically.
Yeah. So you can find that on our YouTube, Just Another Kill Team Podcast on YouTube. And we will have links to that in our Discord as well, which is definitely, if you haven't caught the hint, you should be there.
Yeah. You know, and if anyone is a new listener from the actual YouTube channel, which, you know, would be kind of wild to me, please let us know, because I would love to know if that is actually happening.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, there's a few people that listen to it, and, you know, I don't know if they ported over from one of our other platforms or if we are hitting a new audience. So, yeah, definitely let us know in the Discord or in the YouTube comments.
All right. Well, do we have any final niche tactics that we want to go over today before we split? Just because, you know, we had a plan and, you know, this one has been a little bit more freeform, but any fun niches recently that you've been carving out? Niche
tactics. I mean, I've been having a lot of fun just thinking about incursors. I did a couple games, and Beta Decima specifically seems like it's going to be absolutely insane. Like if you really look at it, there pretty much is not a single safe place to be where an incursor won't hit you if you have an engage order.
Yeah. I mean, that is the name of the game right now for skew matchups, you know, flipping it back over to the other side, talking about, you know, the big meta menace of Felgor, at least at LVO. For people who are looking for one good trick for Felgor, I would say that Wild Rage plus Ruthless Rampage was probably something that got a lot of leverage over the weekend of LVO.
Wild Rage is the plus one
inch? Yeah, plus one inch of movement, and then Ruthless Rampage lets you continue another 3-inch charge after you kill a guy. So I think the big play that Chris Bakke versus James Kelly got fourth, and I think Chris got lower than that, somewhere in the tens, I think. But the way that game got broken open was that Chris was trying to block Ruthless Rampage, so he onto his demo man, because he had two guys kind of like staged out, and he was worried that Jimmy was going to get a Wild Rampage that would give him an extra inch of movement, so he has a 9-inch charge plus 1-inch threat range, and then he was going to Ruthless Rampage out. So Chris moved another dude kind of into the area to body block, but in the process of body blocking, reopened up the demo man and got the demo man killed. So the combo of Wild Rage and Ruthless Rampage is very good. And the other cool thing is if you set it up for turn two, you can also add an extra 3 inches of Call the Herd from your leader. So your opponent can be not really paying attention, and you can suddenly have a single goat fly up 14 inches from their starting position, starting on turning point two. So that's a very nice tactic.
Yeah,
it might not be very niche, just because Felgor are very good in melee situations, but if you've never thought of it, that is one nice combo for the Felgor that I'm almost 100% sure got a lot of use at LVO.
Yes, there is one more piece to it. There's only one goat that can fight twice with the Ruthless Rampage in the middle, and that is the Gorehorn. Is that the he's got the super leading position in the axe?
Gorehorn can fight twice, yes.
Yeah. So he's the only one that can actually, like, fight twice, but it isn't free. So what you need to do is you need to have the whip guy give him an extra APL. So you position him aggressively, like, decently far forward in the midboard. The whip guy gives him an extra APL, and then on the next turn you can call the attack, and then also do the plus 1 inch and the Ruthless Rampage for an extra 3-inch charge, and then you can fight the first person, so charge, kill somebody, 3-inch charge into someone else, kill them also, and none of the other goats can fight twice besides the Mangler, but they specifically say that you can't use Ruthless Rampage in between the two fights. So it's the Gorehorn specifically, and if you're fighting against Felgor, watch out for the Gorehorn specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I got at... I wasn't really super paying attention to this, but Headtaker, you roll a D3 and you heal that number of wounds, but you also get that damage added onto your lethal 5, basically like baby power sword. And me and Jimmy were playing, and he rolled a lot of sixes in that game, but I wasn't fully paying attention to Headtaker. So the next time he attacked with his Felgor Gorehorn, it just one-shot a dude, and I was like, what do you mean he has 8 damage? I thought he only gained, you know, 1 extra damage per hit. He's like, nope, I got a big skull, so now you take big damage. And I was like, cool.
Yep, he's definitely the real MVP of the team. If I was going to throw in one more Felgor niche tactic, this is another, like, somewhat common one that I've seen floating around, but I'm sure there's plenty of people that haven't heard it. The Gnarl Scar is the dude with a bionic arm. He has, like, an all-out attack thing. It's 1 AP, and he can shoot and fight for 1 action point. And if he shoots while he's in melee, he can do that shoot anyways. It just has to be the person that he's in melee with. And then there's like no other restrictions on it. So you give him the crack grenade and then you can just have the Gnarlscar charge into somebody. He's got a crack grenade in his metal fist and then he just punches you in the face with a grenade in his hand is how I look at it.
Basically, and then he just throws a grenade at someone else. And then because he's cunning, at the end of that activation, you can go back to conceal.
Even if you're still in engagement, if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, true. And actually, there's almost no reason not to go back into engagement if you're in melee.
Except for Overwatch.
You can throw the grenade in the melee. If you don't kill them with the crack grenade, go back. Punch them in the face. If they still don't die, go back to conceal no matter what.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I feel like the Gnarlscar and the Gorehorn are two of the big pieces on Felgor. And then the guy who's blind, the Mangler... Mangler is also a really big danger just because he can double hit.
He's mostly dangerous against elites though, because he only gets the buffs against models that are not ready.
Yep. I mean, to be fair, 4 attacks on 4s, 4-6, relentless, you know, is probably a good enough profile against most kind of dorks anyways. But against elites, he specifically just one-shots elites.
Yeah.
Because there's no Phobos operative that's going to survive that except for the leader.
Or the Vox Breaker, because he turns off your rerolls.
Oh, true. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, good team, lots of fun toys. The Felgor have got, probably, I think, if you are going to pick up Felgor, if anyone listeners are going to pick up Felgor, really take a hard look at the tack ploys, because I feel like that's where the majority of the power of the team is. Outside, like, the operatives are all pretty good, but the tack ploys are what allow you to put those operatives in your opponent's backline where they are not expecting them. And that's really where the most power comes in. Because once you're in your opponent's backline, Frenzy is now just ripping them apart because you're just getting free attacks that your opponent has you have no business of getting normally.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, not quite the episode we were planning to, or podcast we were planning to shoot today, but hopefully everybody had fun.
Agreed. I know I had fun.
Well, we'll catch you guys on the next time. Oh, last thing. New York will have the Bushwick Brawl, a 4-round streamed event hosted by our friends over at AGX at the end of February, February 25th. We'll probably be doing a little bit of Beta Decima. We're going to have a custom painted built board of Beta Decima, so that'll be fun to watch. So hopefully everyone who tunes in every week, if you got a little bit of time, come watch us play some Kill Team.
February 25th, if I recall correctly, that is a Sunday.
That is a Sunday.
So get your Sunday hats on and go to the Bushwick Brawl or stream it, which also, I'm assuming that we're going to post the link to that stream in the Just Another Kill Team Discord.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Sweet. Well, thanks for swinging by, listeners, and thank you for staying until the end. Stay frosty.